Inside Florida Politics. The Essential Podcast, powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett, coming in hot from West Palm Beach in our studio here. And I'm joined, as always, by Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy.
Hello, George.
And Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor Zach Anderson.
Hey, George.
And you may say, how can one news organization throw that much voice talent into a single podcast? But wait, there's even more later in the podcast. We believe we're going to be joined by Daytona Beach News Journal political writer Mark Harper on location in Orlando. He'll be coming in later, all from the Gatehouse Empire. But let's talk. This is an exciting day if you're a political junkie, and everybody else probably giving it a big shrug. But this is the day that not one but two candidates for governor named their lieutenant governor picks, both on the same day. And John Kennedy, tell us a little bit about who Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis have selected and what it means for the race.
Well, it was a big day for both campaigns. Gillum chose Orlando businessman Chris King, who was one of his four other rivals for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. King finished fifth in that lineup of many Democrats. But nonetheless, he caught the eye of Gillum, and they share a lot of the same bond as far as the way they take the state in a pretty progressive direction right now as far as Democratic progressivism. On the Republican side, DeSantis chose a state House member from Miami, Cuban-American Jeanette Nunez. She is an eight-year legislator. She's term limited because of that. And she most recently was on the state's Constitution Revision Commission. But Jeanette Nunez maybe brings to the ticket a woman who speaks Spanish, who gives a little bit of a geographic appeal as well as gender diversity to that ticket. So it could be meaningful for both sides.
Checking off a lot of boxes there. Well, we're going to talk a little more about the lieutenant governor selections, but I believe I hear some kind of funky royalty-free music coming in. And listeners of the podcast know that that music means it's time for our pick a number segment, where we're each going to pick a number and then later in the podcast explain what it means. Zach Anderson, would you like to go first with your number?
Yeah, so my number this week is 3.
Very good. 3. Simple number. John Kennedy, have you brought a number for us this week?
I have taken a number. It's 51.
51. Okay. And my number is 0. So once again, and we encourage the podcast listeners to take notes. I'm sure a lot of you do. So if you're taking notes, Zach Anderson has come with a 3, John Kennedy with a 51, and George Bennett, that's me, I have come with a 0 to pick a number. And you're going to want to hang on till the very end of the podcast when we explain the significance of those numbers. But first, let's talk a little more about this LG thing, because let's face it, this is probably the most we're going to talk about the LG, because once the campaign goes, people don't really pay much attention to it. But it's an exciting day today. John Kennedy, I'll start with you. You mentioned just a little bit about these choices. One thing that strikes me is, and I kind of mentioned this last week on the podcast, both sides seem to be wanting to mobilize their base in this election rather than, you know, make these grand appeals to the center. And certainly on Gillum's side, it would seem that picking Chris King was a selection that was made in that frame of mind. Talk a little more about that.
Yeah, Chris King was somebody who, on the campaign trail against Gillum as a rival, he expressed a lot of the same positions that Gillum did. He's a big affordable housing guy, looking to try to increase the availability of affordable housing across the state, supports Medicaid expansion, just as Gillum does, the legalization of recreational marijuana, as Gillum does. And they also, one thing with Gillum is that Gillum is talking about trying to increase the state's corporate income tax. That's not something that King had embraced. But nonetheless, they're both 39-year-old, Florida men. Gillum has had a long career as a city commissioner in Tallahassee, most recently as mayor. For King, this would be his first elected office if he was to win. On the Republican side, with DeSantis and Nunez, that seems to be perhaps a little bit more of a defensive kind of move by DeSantis, in that Republicans in most polls right now are losing the women's vote pretty badly to Democrats, and this could maybe help that. And then also on for the Republicans, some good news is that among Hispanic voters, it seems like Republicans are gaining them. And having Jeanette Nunez, a Cuban-American, on the ticket would only seem to solidify that support right there. So, both sides see some upside to these selections, no doubt.
Zach Anderson, any thoughts you have on the lieutenant governor selections and what they mean?
Well, I think a lot of people who follow politics don't really think that they mean a whole lot. They don't really think that the lieutenant governor candidate is going to really, get you a whole lot of votes necessarily, or really impact the race in any meaningful way. You mentioned sort of checking boxes, and it sort of seems to be a lot about that, sort of filling out the ticket, bringing a little bit of diversity to the ticket. I think the more interesting pick is Chris King. Andrew Gillum already was considered probably the most liberal candidate ever to be nominated for governor by the Democrats. And you bring in Chris King, who's also very progressive, who was talking about, legalizing marijuana, taxing bullets. They're really sort of doubling down on the progressive base vote. And it'll be fascinating to see how Florida voters react to that.
Yeah, some of the other names that were mentioned, and I mean, I definitely got the impression the Gillum, well, I know Gwen Graham for much of the primary was seen as the front runner, and I think the Graham campaign had done some vetting or looking into potential running mates if she won. I don't think the Gillum folks had done that, but Gwen Graham was certainly one of the names mentioned as a potential running mate, and Amy Mercado, a state rep from Central Florida, who's Puerto Rican, was mentioned, and State Rep Lauren Book from down in Broward County, I know, were some of the names that were floated around. Dave Ehrenberg, the state attorney here in Palm Beach County, was mentioned. Although I know, I think in the case of Ehrenberg and Gwen Graham, I don't think the Gillum campaign ever actually contacted them to even discuss the lieutenant governor job. So I don't know that there was, there was certainly speculation, but I don't know that there was much serious discussion about some of those names that were out there.
It seems to me that Gwen Graham, if you really wanted to reach out to the most voters possible, Gwen Graham, a woman, this being the year of the woman, being a centrist, that she seemed to be, the most logical pick in terms of really filling out the ticket, and to go to King, with somebody who really was appealing to the left of the party, really, again, goes more towards just firing up the liberals and trying to boost turnout as much as possible.
I think there was a real bond that developed between King and Gillum during their many months campaigning. They spoke a little bit about that today and in their announcement about the selection. And I think that is something that counts for a lot when it comes to two guys that are going to be trying to campaign together, although they probably will rarely cross paths. That's the great thing about it, having a lieutenant governor candidate, that you basically have somebody else that is helping you campaign across this very big state. And right, that's the role, to show up at places where the gubernatorial candidate cannot. But I think having that sort of relationship, that I don't get the impression that Gillum really did have with Gwen Graham or maybe anybody Frosty. Else at this point.
Thomas Cordy, our sound engineer, is going to cue up a clip. This is Chris King speaking a couple of days ago before his selection at a Unity rally. And so this will give you a little flavor of what you can be hearing from Chris King on the campaign trail. Here we go.
You're Ron DeSantis. This is what should scare you, coming from a guy who's competed with Andrew Gillum for 18 months. Andrew Gillum never gives up. Never gives up. I can tell you because I have text streams with him. I've had calls with him. I've spent so much time with him. There were so many people that said, you can't win. There were so many people that said no when he asked them for money or support or resources. There were people that were plotting the demise of his campaign. You remember? It's not this month. It's next month. It's next month. And Andrew Gillum never gave up. He didn't give up on himself. And if he's the next, which he will be, governor of Florida, he will not give up on you. Let's work together.
All right. There's a little Chris King audio. Zach, what you were saying that, you know, the lieutenant governor probably doesn't have a big impact on the race. I was trying to think, you know, of lieutenant governors that might have, you know, helped the candidate at the top of the ticket. And I remember when Rick Scott ran in 2010, he selected Jennifer Carroll as his running mate, a black female legislator from up in the Jacksonville area. But then I looked actually, and then in 2014, when he ran for reelection, he had Carlos Lopez Cantera from Miami, Cuban American, as his running mate then. And I looked actually, and Scott did better with black voters when Jennifer Carroll was not on the ticket, and he did better with Latino voters when Lopez Cantera was not on the ticket, according to the exit polls. So I don't know how much. You know, there's a whole bunch of different dynamics in each election, but at least on the surface, I don't know that you get a huge boost from those folks. I mean, I think voters are going to make their decision based on the governor candidate rather than the lieutenant governor. Although I do think having a running mate that can speak Spanish is important in Florida, just being able to reach, you know, the large number of Latino voters in Florida. And there is certainly a cultural difference between Cuban Americans and Puerto Ricans and other Hispanic voters. But I think being able to speak their language is probably brings some value to the Republican ticket. Well, and speaking of the Republican ticket, we're going to be joined in just a moment here by Mark Harper, as I mentioned earlier, from the Daytona Beach News Journal. So he's actually the first. That's our guest music. He's the first guest we've ever had. So we're introducing a little bit of guest music. Kind of a surf flavor to it.
He's from That's Daytona sort of Daytona Beach. Beach music, too, it would seem like.
Yeah. Mark, are you there, Mark?
Yeah, I'm here, and I'm hearing that music, and it sounds like Batman. Pretty cool.
Today, you were at an event with Ron DeSantis, with Rick Scott, and with Vice President Mike Pence. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Yes, this was a luncheon fundraiser for Governor Scott, who's running for the United States Senate. And he brought along Mike Pence, the Vice President, to speak to the crowd, and also a lot of the statewide office seekers like Ron DeSantis were in the audience and were introduced as well. But this sort of followed another event down the street, a Republican Unity event. Really, it's just trying to get the ticket together and, you know, build some strength going forward as, you know, the general election season gets kicked off here.
You know, there's been earlier today, Mike Pence and several other officials in the Trump administration felt the need to issue denials that they were behind the anonymous op-ed that ran in the New York Times criticizing President Trump. Did that come up at all in the vice president's appearance today in Orlando?
Not at all. It was just completely pro Rick Scott, pro Trump message. No mess. no mention of Lodestar. So it was pretty much all just a rallying cry for the story the Republicans want to tell about how they feel like the economy is booming and things are going forward, you know, in the right direction. And you know, if you didn't follow the news, you know, and you just listened to this event, you would, you know, not have a hint of what's been going on in the White House the last couple of days.
Rick Scott, I saw a little bit of his remarks at the earlier event. What was the kind of theme of what was the theme of what Mike Pence said about the Senate race?
Well, I think both Pence and Scott are pretty much sharing the same notes. Scott is trying to make a case for himself as the best candidate for the United States Senate, as a job creator. He and Pence both talked about the economy, the forward moving direction that Florida's economy is going in. Made some claims that might be challenged by Democrats about his record. And he said, Pence said, Rick Scott made a record investment in the environment, which I think will raise some eyebrows. You know, Pence also was trying to deliver a message, about the agenda that President Trump has, and that Rick Scott would be an important addition to the Senate.
Did he, Rick Scott and President Trump have been pretty close over the years, broken bread together several times at the White House and down in Florida. Scott was an early cheerleader for Trump when he was running for president in the Republican primary. But then and the president urged Rick Scott at least twice publicly to run for Senate. But then once Rick Scott got in the Senate race, he has not mentioned the president a lot. Was there a lot of specific talk about President Trump, or did Rick Scott say anything about President Trump?
I don't think Rick Scott said a whole lot about President Trump. I think that was more left to Mike Pence. One of the anecdotes I recall Pence talking about was just, trying to give the Republicans at this event a sense that, Trump is, he said, it's like he's driving a truck without a rear view mirror, and it's just all straightforward ahead without looking back. And, I think that's what the hope is. but I'm not sure if that's, really possible at this point.
Mark Harper, thank you for joining us from Orlando. Giving us some on the scene coverage from the Republican event, and I believe your work will be appearing in the Daytona Beach News Journal and other Gatehouse papers in Florida. You'll have coverage of that, am I right?
Yeah, I got to go do that now.
File that story. Thank you very much for joining us.
All right, sure.
Let's talk about I know in some of the in the last podcast we talked about how bad the polls were in the leading up to the Republican and Democratic primaries for governor. But then a couple days after the primaries were over, I started seeing some new general election polls. And I don't know, just as a reflex, I'm a junkie. I was like, wow, new polls. I got to look at them. John Kennedy, what's the polling been so far in the Senate race?
Boy, that is a real toss up. It seems that, for the longest time over the summer, Governor Rick Scott, who is challenging Democrat Bill Nelson, that Scott managed to have a very small, within the margin of error, kind of lead in that race, despite spending a ton of money on television. Now, over the last, the most recent poll that just came out was from Quinnipiac University, and that shows the race a dead heat. 49-49 was the
wow.
Lineup on that. So, it's one of those kind of races that I think many people think is going to come down to those closing days before the election, and also being tilted a lot by what's happening on the national political scene as well. With the Trump White House, if people get really turned off by what's going on there, that, will that hurt Scott as he's going forward? Nelson has a long political history. He's trying to run for his a fourth election to the United States Senate. But he was flagging there for a while, but he's going to get some help from Andrew Gillum on the ticket on the Democratic side, I think, in that it's going to bring some minority voters and a lot of people think some millennial voters to the ticket this year. And Scott, Nelson will be the beneficiary of that, presumably.
Yeah. Now, you were at an event recently where at the we talked about the Republican unity event. And a few days before that, there was a Democratic unity event that you attended. And one of the things that struck me, and our sound engineer Thomas Cordy is going to cue this up in just a second here, is that, you know, Bill Nelson here has been in the Senate for three terms, and Andrew Gillum is, you know, probably before Tuesday's primary, you know, relative unknown statewide in Florida politics, and it just seems like it seems like Nelson is. Banking a lot on Gillum and his pull with minority and young voters to help Nelson's Senate bid. And here's just a little clip of Nelson talking about running on the same ballot as Andrew Gillum.
And as I carry the banner for the Democratic Party, I am going to be there side by side with Andrew, and we're going to take this to victory.
That's about as fired up as you're going to hear Bill Nelson.
That's right.
Your yeah, thoughts on that, John, and then Zach?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic for Nelson. Nelson is going to turn 76 years old in just a couple of weeks. And Gillum and now his running mate are both 39 years old. So there is a huge generational divide on the Democratic side. However, Nelson is looking at Gillum as being somebody who can drive voters right now, and that's going to help him in this narrow race with Scott. However, it's also putting him in a unique position. Nelson has never been seen as a progressive Democrat. I think that's pretty safe to say. He's a he's a pretty conservative centrist. The Republicans throw stones at him by saying, you know, he votes with the Obama White House back in the day, and that he is very much of a partisan voter, but that kind of criticism is one that you can level at most senators in Washington right now. So the a question for Nelson will be, could his siding with Gillum potentially repel more mainstream and perhaps white voters across this state that normally would have voted for Nelson, but now could be fearful of a Gillum ticket? So it's kind of an unknown right now as to the math on that. Nelson is going to be helped by more black and minority and millennial voters going to the polls, but he also potentially could lose a few voters as well.
Zach Anderson, what's your take on where the Senate race is right now?
Dead heat. I mean, I think it's exactly where we expected it to be. There was a little bit of sense there with Scott outspending Nelson early on in the race, pummeling him with negative ads that, and also being fairly popular with his approval ratings, that he might be able to pull away a little bit and put some distance between the two of them. But as we get into the heart of the race here, you know, polls come out and they show that the latest Quinnipiac poll had it at 49-49. And I think that's in our gut where we always really expected it to be. When we look at the outcome from these statewide races in recent years, they're always, you know, just razor thin margins and, you know, decided by, you know, a percentage point or less. And Nelson is kicking in with some of his spending now. He's going up on the airwaves more. And I think it's just going to be a dogfight down to the end here. In regards to Nelson and Gillum and how they played together on the ticket, you know, there's no doubt that Gillum has just a lot more charisma. He was probably the most charismatic candidate in the Democratic primary for governor. He's just a great speaker. He's very energetic. And Nelson is much more courtly, much more kind of subdued, conservative in a way, not somebody who really fires people up. So I'm sure that he's hoping to, you know, tap into some of the enthusiasm that Gillum engenders amongst younger voters and minority voters. And John brought up a good point, though, that, you know, it's sort of like DeSantis and Rick Scott embracing Trump and trying to get some of his voters without turning off the center. Nelson also has to worry about turning off the center. That's one of the reasons that he's been a stronger candidate over the years, is that he's been able to win, you know, white male voters who might not have identified as much with the Democratic Party in recent years. So He's going to have an interesting test here as he campaigns with a more outspoken liberal candidate and how much he embraces some of those positions.
Sure. I think, you know, and John touched on this, Nelson certainly by temperament is, you know, comes across as a moderate and, you know, he certainly, I don't think anybody would consider him far left, but the criticism that Republicans level against him, and it is true in these times, pretty much in Congress, most members of both parties, you know, will vote the party line certainly on major issues. And so, you know, over the years, Nelson certainly on the real gut check votes where the Democratic leadership needed him has voted with his party. And so that's why you get this. You'll always with Nelson, you'll hear this criticism that, you know, he comes across one way, but he votes another way. And but I mean, in modern times, that's kind of the way Congress is. I mean, Republicans and Democrats, it's very polarized without a whole lot of without a whole lot of crossing over. One thing I noticed, I saw Governor Scott's remarks at the earlier Republican Unity event, and I don't know if this was a transcript or his prepared remarks, but I know that he mentioned socialist or socialism six times in his speech, talking about the Gillum Nelson as, you know, as kind of like a ticket. And, you know, because Andrew Gillum is liberal and was endorsed by Bernie Sanders, you're hearing a lot of the socialist label thrown around. And, you know, as Zach pointed out in last week's podcast, the term has kind of been devalued. I mean, I think Republicans during the Obama years just used the term so much that it's almost become devalued as an epithet. But we'll see. They're certainly going to be giving it a run for their money if the early part of the campaign is any indication.
One interesting point, George, about the socialism issue, and I saw another reporter mention this on Twitter today, is that in Miami and in South Florida, that could be a more potent issue. While socialism isn't the sort of the boogeyman that it used to be, maybe with especially with younger voters, with folks from South America, with folks from Venezuela or Cuba, you know, these socialist states that have struggled, especially Venezuela, which has really collapsed. There is much more of a stigma there, and they have seen the problems that can come with the government being too involved in the economy. And you do have a large block of people who have moved here from those areas. And so, you know, if those attacks on Gillum resonate with them, that could be an impact on the race.
This is sort of an upgrade of 30 years ago. We had a U.S. Senate race in this state where it was Connie Mack, Republican, versus Democrat Buddy McKay. And Mack's signature line was, "Hey, buddy, you're a liberal." And that ultimately harpooned the future of Buddy McKay for that Senate seat anyway. This year, it sounds like, you know, the expression is going to be more like, "Hey, Andrew," or "Hey, Bill, you're a socialist."
Right. Well, we'll see what kind of traction that that label gets. Well, all right. All very interesting. And what is that music I hear now? That's the funky, royalty-free pick-a-number music, isn't it? So let's talk about those numbers. Zach, I'll start with you. Your number, if I recall correctly, was 3.
I went with 3. That is the number of Democratic candidates in the Tampa Bay area who, in the last 24 hours, have said that if they were elected to Congress, they would not support Nancy Pelosi for House Speaker. I wrote about David Shapiro, who's challenging Vern Buchanan in this area for the District 16 congressional seat. He came out yesterday and said that he wouldn't support Nancy Pelosi if he's elected. He's been getting hammered by Vern Buchanan on television as Nancy Pelosi's handpicked candidate. So I think he was feeling the heat on that. And then the Tampa Bay Times reported that another two other Democratic candidates running for GOP seats also came out against that. The NBC said that 57 candidates now on the Democratic side have said that they won't support Nancy Pelosi for speaker. And if you add those three in, that would be up to 60. So Pelosi's, you know, she still is someone who is effective. The Republicans use her very effectively. She has a very low approval rating. She's only at about 29% nationally. And being tied to her can be a problem for Democrats, especially in Republican-leaning districts. So we're seeing Democrats here in Florida and around the country distance themselves from her.
There you go. Okay. Solid number there. Three. John Kennedy, 51.
Yeah, 51 is as in 51%, which is 51% of the Florida electorate right now are Generation X, Millennial, or Generation Z, the so-called hashtag generation. That means basically these are people under the age of 54 is the high end of Gen X. So here we are in Florida. That always is seen as synonymous with kind of a retiree state where the older voting population seems to be so potent. This year, it looks like younger voters could be a real factor, and that's the basically the market that Gillum King ticket is pursuing very, very forcefully.
So that's people under 54 years old.
Basically. Yeah.
Wow. All right. You kids get off my lawn. Okay. Well, my number was zero, and zero, just in the spirit of all our discussions about lieutenant governor selections, zero is the number of Florida lieutenant governors in the modern era who have gone on to win elections after they were lieutenant governor. It's kind of a dead-end job since it was recreated in the 1968 Constitution revision. I'm sure everybody learns that in their civics class. There have been 11 lieutenant governors, and a few of them have tried to run for office after being LG, and none of them has won. So it's kind of a political dead end to be lieutenant governor in Florida. Buddy McKay, for example, you mentioned, ran for governor after being lieutenant governor and lost to Jeb Bush. So there you have it.
Maybe we should have played this number before the lieutenant governor selections here. It might have caused Chris King and Jeanette Nunes to think a little bit differently about this.
They might want to reconsider now that, although, you know, it's probably too late now. The ballot is set.
Elephant's graveyard.
There you are. All right. Well, concludes another of the Inside Florida Politics podcasts. We hope you have enjoyed it, and we'll make a point of watching or listening every week. I am Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett. I've been joined by State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy in Tallahassee and Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor Zach Anderson. Thank you.